Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the September NJEDA Annual Board Meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it's their turn to speak. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion to the meeting, members of the public attending in person will be acknowledged to speak first, then by Teams, and then by phone. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide a comment. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press star then one on your telephone keypad to be placed into a queue to provide a comment. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. I will now turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the Open Public Meeting Notice, please?
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger, the Bergen Record, and the Trentonian at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Pursuant to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, this is a public hearing, and comments are invited on any private activity bond projects presented today.
Thank you, Tim. Manure, could you call the roll?
Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Sarlow.
Here.
Bill Elagia.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Maciel Medina Ferrara.
Here.
Jewel Antoine Johnson.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Josh Weinrich.
Here.
Aaron Cruz from the Executive Branch.
Here.
Roberto Salvarenas for Commissioner Angelo?
Here.
Manuel Polino for Commissioner Zimmerman?
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner LaTourette?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a call.
Thank you, Manure. Okay, before us, we have three sets of meeting minutes for approval today. First are the minutes from the June 13th NJEDA Board Retreat Meeting for review and approval. I kindly request the board members state their name for the record when making a motion or a second. Could I hear a motion to approve the June 13th board retreat meeting minutes, please?
Josh, move it.
Thank you, Josh. Second. Thank you, Jewel. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Second, before you are executive session minutes from the June 13th NJEDA Board Retreat Meeting for review and approval, could I hear a motion to approve, please?
Antoine Johnson.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the meeting minutes are approved. And then last, before you are minutes from the August 18th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval, could I hear a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont,
motion.
Thank you, Bill. Consider that a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. I'll give some very brief Chairman's remarks. I hope everyone had a relaxing summer. Welcome to the NJEDA annual meeting today. We have a very full agenda, so I'm going to try and go quickly. But first and importantly, tomorrow is 9/11, our National Day of Service and Remembrance. And I'd like to take a moment to remember those we lost on 9/11, which remarkably was 24 years ago. So a moment of silence, please. Thank you. 2025 has been a banner year for the NJEDA, and our investment numbers exemplify the authority's efforts to finish out Governor Murphy's tenure on a strong note. Over 1,000 applications for grants, loans, and other funding products have been approved so far this year, adding up to over $179 million in awards. An additional $328 million in tax credits have been approved year to date under the Aspire program, helping create more affordable housing options for residents across the state. These numbers represent more than just dollars. They represent thousands of jobs created, businesses expanded, and communities strengthened. In addition to the $22.9 million in funding distributed to small businesses through our Main Street programs this year, the NJEDA has partnered with academia and the private sector to announce 4 new strategic innovation centers across the state. These hubs will bolster innovation and support startup companies in fields such as medtech, biomedical research, and plasma. The board also approved continued investments in industries that are crucial to New Jersey's economic future, such as artificial intelligence, film and digital media, and advanced manufacturing, creating high-quality jobs and strengthening our economic competitiveness. As we enter the last few months of Governor Murphy's administration, the NJEDA continues to advance bold new programs and products to support the state's economic growth while bolstering New Jersey businesses and entrepreneurs. Today, the board will consider NJ Lease, a new lending product which will support the supply chain in New Jersey's New Jersey's blossoming cannabis industry. Another
have you done for a week, Chair Chairman?
Yeah, it is NJ Leap. So let's. Additionally, the board will vote on proposed tax credit awards under the Historic Property Reinvestment Program and the Aspire Program, which will support mixed-use development and the expansion of affordable housing, aiding the revitalization of communities and boosting the life of residents. We will also consider the $500 million Next New Jersey Manufacturing Program, which will provide crucial support to a cornerstone of the state's economy and attract considerable investment into communities across the Garden State. While there is plenty of work left, 2025 is shaping up to be a banner year for the NJEDA and its mission to promote sustainable, equitable economic growth in the Garden State. Now, Tim, your CEO report.
Great. Good morning. Thank you, Chairman. I'll be really brief and welcome Mary to join me in a couple moments. We have a ton to get through. It's as loaded, if not the most loaded agenda I can remember in a long time, which is a good thing. It means we got a lot of work to do over the next two hours. We'll see how we do on keeping the budget for the meeting. I do want to note a personal privilege is Benira's birth week. Happy birthday, Benira.
Happy birthday.
Meetings don't happen without Benira, and they don't want to run someone without Benira, so happy birthday and thank you, Benira. It's been, August obviously was slightly lower year in terms of events and activities, but we're back sort of in back to school mode as we turn from August to September. We had a really great event last week with the governor, Mayor Cahill, a number of other leaders in Middlesex County to break ground on Helix 2, which is the new home of Nokia Bell Labs. I think it's from a placemaking perspective in terms of continuing to revitalize, strengthen New Brunswick, from an innovation economy perspective to get Bell Labs committed to a second century in New Jersey and in New Brunswick and bring 1,000 new employees to downtown New Brunswick, which is going to be home to one of our strategic innovation centers next to one of our other strategic innovation centers, H1. I think just really brings together so much of what Governor Murphy has been focused on these last, seven and a half plus years. And I think really speaks to, continued momentum in the innovation economy. We're also continuing to spot and identify and trying to do our best to get around new opportunities. The governor announced last week that we are going to stand up an Office of Strategic Defense Investment, which is both offense and defense. Offense in the sense of there's $1 trillion or so Pentagon budget, and we'd like to get more than our fair share of those dollars flowing through New Jersey, and then also defense, meaning making sure that both the Joint Base, Picatinny, Naval Station Earl, the Air Wing down in Atlantic City, we're doing all we can to stay on top of those investments and make sure that the federal government recognizes how important those are to Jersey's economy and how many jobs they create. That's going to be led out of Emma's shop. Led out of Emma's shop, so thank you to her and her team for that effort. Looking ahead, next week's the governor's conference on housing and economics held down in Atlantic City. Hopefully we'll see a number of you there. And then on Wednesday night, the governor is leading a delegation that leaves Wednesday night from Newark to New Delhi, where we will do the second trip in this governor's tenure to India. It's our most significant source of foreign direct investment, obviously enormous cultural and people-to-people ties. We're the most densely people of Indian origin represent a higher percentage of New Jersey's population than any other state in America. And so the economic ties, the cultural ties, the people-to-people ties are extraordinary. This governor's second visit to India, and that's being led by Choose New Jersey. And myself, Emma, Andrew, will get to be a part of that trip. So if I'm responding to emails at odd hours, it's because it's the middle of the day in India somewhere. I'll do my best to keep up. But we've got, obviously, from a keeping our foot on the gas, running through the tape, whatever metaphor you wish to use for Governor Murphy, that certainly exemplifies. We're out there trying to drum up new opportunities, even with 4+ months left to go. Mary, anything you want to add?
Two other things, Chairman. You mentioned that we're going to be launching our next New Jersey manufacturing program here today. Huge kudos to the team. You'll hear from Gene later, but it was truly a team effort bringing this program to the board today, given that the governor signed it into law in August. So not our usual pace and a really exceptional example of how we collaborate internally and externally. So great job to the team. We're excited to bring that forward. And then a shout out to our EDA team that worked with Afrotech and Blaverty to bring Afrotech Executive 2025 to Newark last week. Michelle and I and a bunch of our team members were there for really great afternoon and evening of presentations, including our very own board member, Aisha Glover, who participated in a panel with Congresswoman Monica McIver and talked a lot about the need for government collaboration with startups to fuel the innovation economy. I think, what do you think, Michelle, 12, 15 mentions of EDA for a 30-minute panel discussion. So a pretty good run rate for kudos to EDA, and that speaks to all the work that we do here from the board on down. So thank you all very much for that. It was a really great time and great presentation.
Great. Less than mentioning of your board dashboard, I won't go through it in great detail, but I said August was a little bit of a slow month. Still 200 individuals, $158.5 million, the taxpayers' money being invested in a variety of priorities and things across the board. So I guess not that slow. So with that, Chairman, back to you.
Great. Thank you, Tim and Mary. Okay, we're going to now open the public comment portion of the meeting. I'm going to ask Danielle Esser to share the NJEDA's policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For members of the public who wish to provide public comment, please be advised that folks in the room will be acknowledged first, then by Teams, and then by phone. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Each person will be acknowledged to speak one at a time in order of hands raised. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself to provide your comment. All members of the public must remain muted following the public comment portion of the meeting. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star, then one, to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue to speak and provide comment based on the order received. Now I'll share NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired, and a person may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there is enough time available for all those who wish to speak. Related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comment at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I'd now like to acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comment. First, I'm going to call on anyone in the room who would like to speak. Anyone in the room who wishes to speak? Okay, seeing none, let's call on members of the public on Teams with their hands raised. Anyone?
Anybody from the public who wishes to provide comment, please select the raise hand feature.
It isn't even necessary, though, given how your oversight investigation is proceeding.
We want everything. You don't want it. Drip. Remember.
Let's mute that person. Mr. Chairman, I'm not seeing anybody.
Okay, then lastly, operator, anyone on the phone who wishes to speak?
Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press star then one at this time. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from Lisa Grega. Your line is open.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Grega, and I am president and founder of Noble Valley Harvest Company, an awardee of a medical cultivation license from the 2019 licensing round. I am speaking on the NJ Leaf program. My business recently became operational in March 2025, and for the past several years, I have been monitoring the NJEDA for grant opportunities for my business. I was confused and disappointed by my ineligibility to apply for the $250,000 joint equity grant program, which was launched a couple of years ago. I recently learned of the $75,000 cannabis business development grant, which also excludes ATCs from applying. I want to bring to light a potential misconception that all ATCs are multi-state operators. That is and never was the case. In the 2019 licensing round, there were many single-state operators consisting of dispensary, vertical, and cultivator ATCs. This list includes Noble Valley Harvest Company, Roots Roots, Hillview Med, Holistic Solutions, Valley Wellness, Aunt Mary's, Monte Verde, Silverleaf, Honey Grove, NJ Leaf, Eastern Green, Rift, Urban, Design 710, The Station, Downtown Flower, BOA Cannabis, Garfield Gardens, and Roots. These are all class of 2019 businesses who have managed to open despite long licensing delays. This list totals 20, yes, 20 small-scale businesses which to date have been excluded from participating in access to NJEDA cannabis grant programs. Many of these businesses are woman-owned, veteran-owned, and family-owned. I would like to further point out that every single ATC on this list has to pay one extraordinary expense that no adult-use business has to bear. That is an expansion fee just to sell to the recreational market, which ranges from $100,000 for dispensaries to $800,000 for a vertical operator such as Bruce Roots. A cultivator such as Noble Valley Harvest must pay $400,000. We deserve access to these programs more than anyone. When we were initially awarded our license, we were told the patient population would swell to 180,000. Rather, the opposite happened. We are literally forced to pay this fee for our very survival. The NJ Leaf program is funded by the $14 billion Economic Recovery Fund created in 2020. It is our businesses, those from 2019 whose applications sat and languished for over 2 years during the COVID pandemic, which were directly impacted by the pandemic, not recreational businesses, which were not licensed until 2022 and thereafter. Prior to drafting the final eligibility requirements for NJ Leaf and future grant programs, I implore you to take these points into consideration and to meet with current class of 2019 businesses who can help distinguish us from the type of businesses you want to exclude. These discussions can help craft programs which benefit deserving cannabis businesses, regardless of the market they serve, who continue to struggle from lack of access to capital. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. It's Tim Sullivan. I appreciate your comments. Thanks for taking the time to dial into our meeting. Certainly worth a longer conversation. We'll have to have our team follow up if you can learn a little bit more about the challenges, you know, transparently and candidly. The cannabis programs we do bring forward are focused on the newer adult use recreation market. Doesn't mean other programs that may not be have the word cannabis in them might not be able to help support your businesses or similarly situated ones. And if it's something we should be thinking about as a broadening of the cannabis efforts, there's some statutory and legal requirements that make that more complicated and more easily said than done in terms of the CREAM Act and some of the other regulations. But certainly worthy of a longer conversation. And if you haven't already, make sure to, you know, we can find you after this conversation and set up some time to talk through it. That's okay.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for hearing my comments. And yeah, I look forward to further conversations about it.
Thank you. We have no further questions at this comments at this time.
Okay, we'll consider the telephone portion closed. Someone want to address the
podium and introduce yourself, name, first name, last name, name of organization.
Yes. My name is Dr. Eliza Brevard Rodriguez. Do I need to spell that?
If you could, that would be great.
That would be great. Eliza, A-L-Y-Z-A. Last name is B-R-E-V-A-R-D hyphen R-O-D-R-I-G-U-E-Z. And I'm here on behalf of my organization called The Other Side Dispensary. So I just have some comments that I wanted to share. Is this timed or anything? About 3 minutes is how this works.
Three minutes.
Okay. Started? Okay. So to make sure I follow the rules. All right. So thank you, everybody, for having this on the agenda. I'm happy to see that cannabis is on the agenda and that the state is waking up to the realities of our state's newly developed cannabis industry. Large municipalities like Jersey City, Atlantic City, and Newark are drowning in irresponsible oversaturation from our cities and the high taxation on top of astronomical fees, and it's all causing rapid closure all over the state. With the tax burden of 280E, the fear of the current federal administration, and just the shopping trends of the society that we now live in, and the unknown future of the cannabis industry, not knowing if President Trump is going to reschedule or if he's just going to come for the industry, that has caused limited private equity to flow into this industry. And for me, I feel like this should have been a first indicator of our downfall. But better, a planned intervention strategy by the state should have been developed as an emergency contingency plan, considering that we have seen this with other states. But no, Jersey wanted to wait until we're all in shambles and distress before we do anything about it. But it doesn't help that the legislation is rock solid and the CREAM Act ties the hands of a lot of agencies, and we understand that as operators. The same includes for the CRC. And then, you know, we're in an election season and we don't have bold politicians that will strive to address the laws that need to be amended or changed. So as a homegrown operator that got zero funding from this organization the first time around and still has had zero state or local support, despite being the only all-minority-owned dispensary in the nation. We are minority-owned, funded, and led. I'm a 10-year military, two-time combat veteran. Our state's funds were not only distributed to various out-of-state operators, but now I'm watching our state diluted by out-of-state operators and corporate operators that are savvy in navigating our grant programs and having multiple of our grants rather than supporting those of us who represent the state's diversity data. We are slowly being crushed by this agency's volatility. And further, it's sort of insulting to see grants as AI and film and other sectors that New Jersey remains committed to, but cannabis is an afterthought, or worse, some sort of a scary word. So I just want to say, I served this nation for 10 years and 7 as a public servant. And let me tell you, cannabis has saved my life. Right now, I'm shaking, my feet are jittering, and I no longer have a service dog. So things like this are very, very difficult for me. But I most recently sat with one of your agency's representatives, and she said that the New Jersey CREAM Act explicitly states that it's not to be funded by the government. And I find that that justification is not fair because we have brought over 50,000 jobs, billions in revenue. AI is ambitious, but it's an investment and it's a theory. Film is great, but it takes months and it takes a long time to see ROI per project. Cannabis is here. We are actively contributing to our state's economic growth, and a lot of other states look to us for how we did it. So PA, the last thing I'm going to say is that PA is literally about to legalize recreational cannabis because they need $400 million in revenue for their budget shortfall. That is going to come from us, but also if it doesn't motivate us, then I don't know what will. We need to bolster our industry. We need to compete with the states that are going to come on board and going to take the revenue away from us. And if Johnson & Johnson here developing the vaccine is another marker putting New Jersey on the map, then we can be that for cannabis as well. I mean, we're the Garden State. I'm rooting for us, but we cannot do it without y'all, and it has to happen fast.
Thank you, Doctor. That's it.
Thank you. Any other comments? Nothing on the phone? Okay, we'll consider the public comment section of the meeting closed. Now moving on to action items, I'm going to give a very quick policy committee report. The policy committee met on August 27th, considered several items which will all be presented for action today, so I'm not going to go through them. We'll get to the first item on the agenda. The first item is authority matters. This is the EDA's annual organization meeting. Board members, you have a memo from me with suggested changes, and Danielle will walk us through them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the chairman mentioned, today is the annual organizational meeting of the NJEDA board, and the memo provides for a few requests. First off is the election of officers. Charles Sarlo has been serving in the role of vice chairman and is recommended that members approve Charles Sarlo to continue to serve in the position of vice chairman. In addition, the position of board treasurer has traditionally been held by the state treasurer, who serves on the board in an ex officio capacity. It is recommended that the board
recommend the continuation of the treasurer to serve in the board position of treasurer. As per the bylaws, Tim Sullivan, in his role as CEO, serves as the board secretary. The bylaws provide for the appointment of assistant secretaries, as noted in the memo, and the members are requested to approve the appointment of assistant secretaries, including Mary Maples, Lisa Almeida, Bruce Fiella, Fred Cole, Lori Mateus, and Daniel Esser, myself. The committees also approved authorized the appointment of five standing committees who have chairs and members as appointed by the chairman. As he has advised, he has made some changes to some of the committees in terms of chairmanship and membership. And lastly, members are requested to reaffirm the appointment of Marcus Saldudi as the authority's records custodian, Shamira Alvarez as the assistant records custodian, and the members are also requested to affirm the appointment of Allison Jones as the authority's ethics liaison officer. And now, finally, the members are requested to approve the calendar of board meetings through September 2026. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions or comments? So hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? Thanks, Josh. Second?
Second, Antoine Johnson.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the annual organization minutes or suggestions are approved. Next, we're going to have a slight change in the order, and we're going to go to Emma presenting on NJ Base.
The members of the board are asked to approve the award of the New Jersey International Landing Center contract to SOSA USA LLC to serve as the operator of the New Jersey Business Acceleration and Soft Landing Ecosystem, NJ Base, for 1 3-year term valued at $2,352,000. Earlier this year, the board approved the creation of NJ Base, a new initiative designed to attract international startups scaling into the U.S. market. The program aims to draw high-growth, revenue-generating companies from abroad and connect them directly to New Jersey, helping them access business opportunities, establish partnerships, and grow their presence in the United States. NJ Base will offer free, high-quality co-working space at 3 2nd Street, Jersey City, a Class A fully furnished space totaling 7,282 square feet, alongside a targeted 6-week business immersion program designed to connect companies with New Jersey partners, resources, and market opportunities. To select an operator, the EDA issued a request for proposals, an RFP, on June 23rd, 2025. The RFP was advertised in 5 statewide newspapers, posted on the authority's website and state business portal, and circulated to nearly 2,000 firms, 1,900 to be exact, through New Jersey Start. Proposals were due on July 29th, of which the NJEDA received 10, though one was deemed non-responsive. 9 proposals were scored by an evaluation committee against established criteria at 35% for the technical proposals, 35% for experience, 20% for personnel, and 10% for cost. After initial scoring, 5 firms advanced to the best and final offer negotiations held between August 20th and September 2nd. Based on the strength of its technical proposal and highest overall score, SOSA was invited to submit a further revised offer. They reduced their price twice, ultimately bringing the cost down by $510,000, an overall savings of 17.82% compared to their original proposal. SOSA's qualifications are impressive. They are a global innovation platform with more than a decade of experience running 40 international accelerator and landing programs and partnerships with governments and Fortune 500 companies. Their programs have attracted thousands of applicants, successfully scaled startups from more than a dozen countries, and they bring a unique mix of expertise at the intersection of startup acceleration, corporate innovation, and venture capital. Just as importantly, SOSA has a track record and experience to make NJ Base a success, with deep ties to leading investors, global trade offices, and major corporate partners, along with a global reputation for operating landing centers of this kind. They are well-positioned to ensure the program delivers meaningful growth for participating companies and long-term economic benefits for the state. With that, I will open it up to any questions.
Got a couple things. First, great job as always, Emma. One, this is pretty timely with the India trip because this is the kind of thing that sells really well overseas. The notion that maybe there are some companies that are looking to, build a building and occupy an office and bring a couple hundred people or hire a couple hundred people. Some it's 1 or 2 or 3 people that are kind of going to be the expeditionary force and see how the states go and go from there. And that's where this is really. We also just tying things back to way early in the administration in 2018, as part of the governor's economic mission to Israel or Germany. Germany was on that trip as well. We met with and visited SOSA's Tel Aviv operations in 2018, which is about 465 years ago, I believe. But this is very impressive, and they're an important global player. This,
I was going to ask if any references on this.
We were actually, when we were in the Gulf, we visited Hub 71, which we signed an MOU with, incredibly impressive. And when they were establishing that landing pad, SOSA was their primary consultant standing it up. So they're globally kind of the go-to for things like this.
Any further questions, comments? Okay, who here a motion to approve? Thanks, Phil. And no further questions. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thanks, Emma. Okay, back on our regular schedule, the next item under community development is Jay Leap.
Morning. So staff is seeking approval for NJ Leap, a pilot program that will offer New Jersey cannabis cultivators, recreational licensed cannabis cultivators, manufacturers, and test laboratories up to $1.5 million in financing to support costs for equipment, owner-occupied real estate, and working capital. As you've heard earlier, the industry, the cannabis industry, is growing, actively growing. We're seeing licenses being approved pretty much monthly, and currently there are over 100 cultivators, manufacturers, and testing laboratories that are in license today, and there are more that are actually being or on the pursuit of being licensed so that they can begin their operations. So with the market expanding and the industry continuing to grow, it was just ever so important to ensure that access to capital is available to our cannabis businesses to ensure the success and growth of the New Jersey cannabis industry. As such, staff is seeking approval to utilize state funding of $15 million from NJEDA Economic Recovery Fund, in addition to delegated authority to the CEO to allow staff to approve eligible loans as aligned with NJEDA's current credit and risk rating policies, program specifications, and board memo. Next slide. Eligibility under NJ Leap is aligned with NJEDA's standard lending criteria and seller requirements for these cannabis operators. Specifically, applicants must hold a valid NJCRC Class 1, Class 2, or test and laboratory license. They must also be in good standing with NJCRC, NJEDA, and our state sister agencies. The cannabis business must also be operating for at least one full calendar year with less than $5 million in gross revenues, and have fewer than 250 full-time employees. In addition to that, we are looking for cannabis to commit to one New Jersey-based job for every 65,000 of EDA loan culture foods program within closing 2 years. All owners owning 10% or more of the business, of the cannabis business, must also secure or guarantee the loan, and at least one owner must have credit score of at least 650. Applicants must also secure the financing with the fixed assets of real property or equipment and meet the minimum debt service coverage ratio of 1.0. Next slide, please. Eligible use for the program does include three eligible uses, one being real estate. Financing can be up to 100% of loan to value in terms of 30 years. For equipment, financing can be up to $1.5 million, up to 90% of our costs in terms up to 10 years. And for working capital can be up to terms up to 7 years. So the program will support these three categories as we've seen the increase in costs for these businesses and maintaining their operations. Owner-occupied real estate will require 51% of occupancy, and prevailing wage will apply for equipment. While the program includes tailored eligibility criteria specific to cannabis operators, financing decisions will remain fully risk-based and evaluated according to the same credit standards applied across NJEDA lending and underwriting standards. The final fixed interest rate will reflect the credit risk identified during the underwriting and will be tied to the equivalent term U.S. Treasury rate for 1% for. All of this is consistent with today's approach used in NJEDA's business banking program. In closing, NJLEAF represents an important step in addressing capital and access barriers for New Jersey recreational cannabis operators that incur higher than normal costs to operate and scale their businesses. This initiative aims to create jobs, stabilize the supply chain, and reinforce New Jersey's position as a leader in building a safe and regulated recreational cannabis industry. Thank you, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Noting this is a exciting, bit of a unique one for us. Often when we're doing lending, we're partnering with private sector and banks. Given the many complexities of cannabis, that's not really an option here. So we're actually sort of more of a bridging a market failure or a market gap. That doesn't really exist. That being said, these loans should be pretty attractive from a credit perspective compared to certainly some of the loans we do that are more policy driven, mission driven. This is should be you know, reasonably good commercial loans that should earn return for the party's investment and, you know, the principal and all that. So
it's interesting that we, that we frequently get public comments regarding the difficulty of the business, right? I mean, this is the third, I think, speaker we've had.
Yep.
And the speaker on the phone was a different issue. I mean, is there any general color commentary about sort of the state of the industry? If you listen to our speakers, it would sound like it's quite difficult.
Certainly difficult. I think that's a fair take. Welcome, Ty, or where's Jenna, or something like that, to jump in. But I think it varies by location. There are some places where there's been a significant concentration. Atlantic City is probably the poster child for that, where there's probably too much too fast would be one way to think about it. There are lots of communities where there's significant demand and the local governments have either yet seen fit to approve things, and so you have kind of a geographically bifurcated market. In a lot of regards, you do have significant out-of-state competition. You do have significant, well-capitalized multinational companies in this market, plus a bunch of homegrown, hopefully success stories. So it's tough sledding. I wouldn't think anyone would say this is a sledding. But if you're open, if you have a good location, if you have good branding, which a lot of these places really do. That's what I mean about the loan quality. These would be really, you know, properly underwritten. These are not just, you know, these are not grants. These are underwritten loans.
So there's credit standards and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
Dave Lawyer is also here to talk about the credit side. And we made sure that this is operating like a traditional loan. And when it comes to the market, New Jersey has an incredibly robust market. And as you'll see with all of our grant and loan programs, we immediately oversubscribed because there is such a need to have access to capital. And so what we're doing is a drop in the bucket, but it's enough to make sure that we're helping. I think Jenna's going to talk about 98 businesses that have been able to open and operate but for and because of NJEDA. So you'll hear a little bit more about the success story. And again, the passion we heard from the speakers earlier is because it is a robust market. It is a $1 billion market in New Jersey.
Just
in New Jersey alone. It's a $2 billion market. And I would say EDA has taken a lot of risk with doing grants and with doing loans. But our success rate has been really high. And again, if we could do more, if you guys want to give us more money, we'll always do that. But again, it's good to hear the passion from so many constituents and businesses because there is still a need for more access to capital. But I think the loan program and the suite of grant programs that we have is really helping so many that are really prepared, that are ready to go. And Jenna will talk about some of the other highlights we have. But great job tonight. If Dave wants to add any context on the success of our loan portfolio, then you can do that.
We haven't done any yet, right?
No loans. This is the first loan program like this, I want to say, in the nation.
Yes.
Say that loud.
I do have one question with regards to the loan. Are we able to identify the EDA as first in line in the event of a default? Are we first? Our position is first?
Yes. We will be first in line. Our first lien on the collateral is identified, and we'll be first in line, absolutely.
Pretty often first and only, because if you're federally chartered or state chartered, you are, generally speaking, there's workarounds, but generally not allowed to lend to cannabis companies. So it's not a crowded marketplace for those lien positions. I wish it was. Someday it should get there, and we'll probably drop out of this business at some point or drop back in this business once the market matures, but right now it's...
If there's a private investor, maybe ask them to take a second position.
If they're a lender, yeah.
Anyone on the phone, comments or questions?
We do have one.
Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
I'll move to Roger.
Thank you. Phil, second.
Robert Shimka.
Cool. Let's do Shimka. We'll do Robert on that one. Thank you, Robert. any further discussion? So hearing none, could I hear a motion? Or all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Good luck.
Thank you.
Next, the Cannabis Equity Grant Program update.
I'm Jenna Jones, and I am the Senior Officer in Community Development. Today, I will be giving an update on our two grant programs that we launched, approved by the board in December 2022 and launched in 2023. Again, those were the largest grant programs in the country. I just wanted to make a comment on the NJ LEAF program as well. Again, we are the first in the country to do this kind of work, and the amount of money available that we are available for the loans is going to enable cultivators and manufacturers to, you know, to possibly buy their building, to invest in more technology, to be able to cultivate. And that is the key, really, to staying alive in this market, is to grow cannabis that people will buy. So it's very, very unique. Each cultivator produces a unique cannabis that then can be sold and dispensed. So today I'll be giving an update on the Cannabis Equity Grant Program and seeking delegated authority to the CEO to extend the joint venture's two-year grant agreement term by another 12 months for the remaining 13 joint venture awardees. I will again put my ask at the end, since that was kind of quick. The cannabis industry is a $2 billion cash-only market where small business owners are frequently shut out due to a lack of access to capital. In a powerful partnership with the Governor Murphy's office and the NJCRC, NJEDA has invested $20 million into cannabis grant programs designed to empower small businesses, drive tax revenue, and create local jobs in this rapidly growing industry. I would also note we have another grant that's going to come online October. We're hoping for October. It's another $5 million invested. As a national leader and pioneer, NJEDA offers the largest cannabis business grants in the country, providing critical early-stage funding that small businesses desperately need to succeed. To date, nearly $15 million has already been distributed through these programs, including the joint ventures and seed equity grants, as well as our soon-to-be-launching cannabis business grant. NJEDA is not just funding businesses, it's transforming the landscape for equity and opportunity in New Jersey's cannabis industry. Next slide, please. First, I will highlight the achievements and criteria of the Joint Ventures Grant Program. This powerful grant delivers $250,000 in two disbursements to businesses that are further along in the licensing process, those that have secured site control and municipal approval. To qualify, grantees must meet the leadership and educational standards, have established their business before March 9, 2020, employ fewer than 50 people, and hold a conditional or annual cannabis license from the NJCRC. Most importantly, equity is at the center of NJEDA's work, which is why the Joint Ventures Program dedicates a 40% set-aside for social equity applicants and a 5% set-aside for businesses located in impact zones. These are NJCRC designations geared towards establishing equity in the NJ cannabis industry. The intentional focus ensures that this program not only supports growth, but also drives meaningful access in the burgeoning market. Next slide, please. For the Joint Ventures Program, 48 applications were approved. Of these, 27 approvals were minority-owned businesses, which is 56% of all approvals, 20 approvals were women-owned businesses, which is 43% of all approvals, and 12 approvals were for businesses that were both minority and women-owned, which is 25%. The approvals were also spread across 14 out of the 21 counties. We're very proud that we were able to achieve a diverse awardee and geographic pool of awards.
Out of curiosity, how many applications were made out of, so 48 were approved out of how many?
So for joint ventures, we had 163.
Wow.
Actually, initially we had 24, but the we had 24 approvals. We only had enough money for 24. But then EDA made another $10 million available, so we were able to double that, which made a huge, huge difference.
There's 120 who didn't get awards.
Correct. So to date, am I on the right slide? Can I have the next slide, please? To date, 46 grantees have been awarded under the Joint Ventures Program, totaling $11.5 million in funding. $9.55 million has been distributed to grantees. Currently, these are our wins for the Joint Ventures. Currently, 33 grantees are open and operating, including 25 dispensaries, 3 manufacturers, 4 cold readers, and 1 testing lab. 13 grantees are still in the process of opening because they have encountered construction, zoning, and municipal delays. Next slide, please. So this slide shows pictures of common characteristics of cannabis businesses, including the community murals, an important aspect of community-focused businesses, equipment used to package different cannabis products, and formerly abandoned buildings that are being repurposed. Next slide, please. The second grant program under the Cannabis Equity Grant Program umbrella is the Seed Equity Grant Program, another powerful tool designed with equity at its core. Exclusively available to NJCRC social equity applicants, this program also receives a 5% set aside for businesses located in the impact zone, ensuring targeted support for communities negatively impacted by the war on drugs. NJEDA awarded $150,000 in grants to another 48 grantees, distributed over 4 milestone-based payments of $37,500. Seed Equity specifically supports businesses in the earliest stages of the licensing process, providing critical funding at pivotal moments to help turn their vision into reality. Grantees must meet requirements similar to those in the Joint Ventures Program and are required to complete a comprehensive technical assistance program, equipping them with the tools and knowledge needed to successfully launch and sustain their business. This program is a vital step towards building a more inclusive, equitable cannabis industry in New Jersey. Next slide, please. As a cornerstone of NJEDA's groundbreaking technical assistance program, NJEDA partnered with Oaksterdam University, the nation's premier cannabis education leader, to deliver an unparalleled 9-week hybrid entrepreneurship training tailored specifically to New Jersey's cannabis market. This comprehensive program equips entrepreneurs with the essential skills in business management, financial planning, compliance, and risk mitigation. Participants benefit from a dynamic mix of interactive digital resources, live virtual classes, hands-on in-person workshops, expert one-on-one coaching, and invaluable networking opportunities, all designed to ensure their success. This program's remarkable 100% graduation rate speaks to its effectiveness in preparing cannabis business owners to confidently navigate the industry and thrive from day one. Next slide, please. For the Seed Equity Grant Program, 48 applications were approved. Of these, 36 approvals for minority-owned businesses, which is 73.5% of all approvals, 10 approvals for women-owned businesses, which is 20% of all approvals, 9 approvals were for both minority and women-owned businesses, which is 15% of all approvals. The approvals were, again, spread across 14 of the 21 counties, ensuring these grants deliver impactful support and opportunities throughout the state. Next slide, please. To date, 48 grants have been awarded under the Seed Equity Program, totaling $7.2 million in funding. Of this, $5.1 million has been distributed. Currently, 11 grantees are open and operating, including 7 dispensaries, 3 manufacturers, and 1 cultivator. In addition, 23 grantees have already secured site control and municipal approval, which is one of the major hurdles in opening a cannabis business. And this is one of our Seed Equity grantees. He actually has a dispensary in Ewing. His name's Tahir Johnson. And, you know, we have our CEO. We have Michelle, who also came, and Senator Singleton. We have the dog, whose name is Rolly. I saw him this weekend and was able to get the name. Next slide, please.
It's better than blossoming.
Again, this slide shows pictures of the openings under the Seed Equity Grant Program. You see community murals, grant openings, and some themes different cannabis businesses adopt to engage their customer base. Next slide, please. This slide summarizes the Cannabis Equity Grant Program. Now for our ask. Today, we are seeking delegated authority to the CEO to extend the joint venture's 2-year grant agreement term by another 12 months for the remaining 13 joint ventures awardees who were unable to submit for their second disbursement, provided the grantee has demonstrated any delays in their annual license approval are due to unforeseen circumstances beyond their control. Next slide, please. Thank you for listening to my presentation, and if there's any questions, feel free to ask.
So the ask is just extending the term for people who have not been able to deploy the capital yet.
Correct. So the initial grant agreement is 2 years. So there's 13 that are almost there. They have to wait on CRC. There's municipal delays, all of that. So we're asking to extend it for another.
It's not that they've failed or
no, not at all. And in fact, a couple of them, I think CRC has a very long line of final inspections. So a couple of them, it's going to come down to the wire.
And we have the capital to do this, right?
Yeah.
Any questions? Comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, can we hear a motion to approve the extension as requested?
I'll move for.
Thank you. Second?
Juan Johnson.
Hearing no further questions or comments, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none. Extension is granted. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Next manufacturing program. Dean.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Tim, Mary, Chairman O'Toole, members of the board. My name is Gene Palermo, Project Officer of the Manufacturing Incentives and Tax Credits Department and product owner of the Next New Jersey Manufacturing Program. Members are asked to approve the three following items. First, the special adoption and concurrently proposed new rules for the Next New Jersey Manufacturing Program and authorize its staff to submit these rules to the Office of Administrative Law for publication in the New Jersey Register and submit the rules as final adopted rules if no substantive comments are received, subject to final review and approved by the Office of the Attorney General and the Office of Administrative Law. Second, the creation of the Next New Jersey Manufacturing Program, a tax credit initiative program designed to attract and support manufacturers and clean energy product manufacturers throughout New Jersey. And lastly, delegation of authority to the Chief Executive Officer to approve administrative changes to the approved Next New Jersey Manufacturing Program awards as currently exists for New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020 programs and the approved CAFE program. A bit of background. On January 7, 2021, Governor Phil Murphy signed the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020, which included over 15 economic development programs such as tax credits for job creation, innovation support, community revitalization, small business resources, and more. The act introduced the Emerge program for job creation and retention and the Aspire program for economic growth and real estate development with $6.6 billion in funding. Additionally, on August 13, 2025, Governor Murphy signed the Next New Jersey Manufacturing Program Act, leveraging $500 million from the Emerge and Aspire programs with applications open until March 1st of 2029. Governor Murphy has identified manufacturing as vital to New Jersey's economy, driving job creation, innovation, and competitiveness. As a result, the New Jersey Manufacturing Program is created and launched in 2022. Since its launch, New Jersey Manufacturing Voucher Program has committed more than $61 million in awards to over 450 manufacturers across three phases. These awards have enabled companies to invest over $299 million in upgraded equipment and processes. This infusion of capital has boosted productivity, enhanced competitiveness, and helped secure the future of manufacturing jobs in the state. Building on this, the Next New Jersey Manufacturing Program offers tax credits to attract investment, create jobs, focusing on advanced manufacturing, life sciences, defense, and clean energy. The program aims to position New Jersey as a leader in modern manufacturing and supports companies that establish or expand their presence in the state. To be eligible, a project must meet various criteria at the time of application as reviewed by the board. Make note, the underlined items within the memo show the staff recommendations on the proposed additions to the legislative language to provide additional clarity and examples to ensure staff and applicants are effectively identified and manufacturing initiatives as outlined in the statute. First, applicants must be manufacturers or clean energy product manufacturers. Manufacturing involves producing or assembling goods for sale, while clean energy product manufacturing product manufacturing, focuses on renewable energy components. The program excludes refurbishing, retail, wholesale, packaging, software development, resource extraction, waste incineration, and agriculture. Businesses must also create 20 new full-time jobs with employees spending 80% of their work time in New Jersey and earning at least 120% of the county's manufacturing median salary in the aggregate. Health insurance must be offered within 90 days of employment. A minimum capital investment of $10 million at a qualified business facility is required, covering costs like site preparation, construction, and equipment. Landlord contributions are allowed, but site acquisition, vehicles, and heavy equipment are excluded. The program also requires businesses to enter into a collaborative relationship with educational institutions, workforce development organizations, or other relevant entities in New Jersey to provide opportunities for workforce hiring, training, or other collaborative activities. Staff recommends the board to allow additions to the statute to include vocational, technical schools or institutions in New Jersey, and labor organization, business or employer associations, or nonprofit community-based organizations that provide workforce training, apprenticeship, and career development services. This all falls in line and is consistent with other EDA training grant programs. Eligible manufacturing facilities include any building, complex of buildings, or structural components in New Jersey primarily used for manufacturing. Ancillary activities like packaging, distribution, and research and development may also qualify as part of the manufacturing space. Staff recommends using 50% to determine the primary use at the qualified business facility. Additionally, staff recommends additional ancillary activities due to the fact that they support and are interdependent with the manufacturing process. Staff thinks this change will provide clarity and examples, helping both staff and applicants more effectively identify eligible spaces for businesses to be considered primarily manufacturing at the qualified business facility. Additionally, eligibility criteria are considered in the aggregate for a complex of buildings, including job creation, capital investment, and primary use for manufacturing. The program requires approved businesses to commit to stay in New Jersey for 10 years, and tax credits will be awarded annually over the first 5 years of the 10-year commitment period. Next slide, please. Tax credits are calculated on the lesser of the following rate: 0.1% of the number of new full-time jobs multiplied by the total capital investment, that is the award calculation. Then we have the max award percentage, which is 25% of the award, which is calculated by taking that 25% and times that by the CapEx. And then we also have a cap of $150 million in tax credits on this program. So, for example, if a manufacturer is looking to increase their headcount by 100 and make it a capital investment of $300 million, first we'll take the calculation, 0.1% times 100, which equals an award calculation of 10%, and we're going to multiply that by the $300 million to get a potential award of $30 million. Now we'll compare it against the other two caps. 25% times $300 million is $75 million, and of course the cap of $150 million. So in this example, the company would receive a tax credit award of $30 million, as it is the lesser of the three calculations. To demonstrate success of providing manufacturers bonuses to the New Jersey Manufacturing Program and the authority's ongoing commitment to supporting businesses in distressed areas and underrepresented ownership groups, the statute authorizes the authority to establish stackable bonuses. The statute does not specify any bonuses, but it does authorize the EDA at its discretion to establish bonuses so long that it does not exceed 5% of the award. As such, and piggybacking off the success of bonuses in the New Jersey Manufacturing Program, staff recommends the following stackable 1% bonuses up to a maximum of 5% and a max award of $150 million. 1% for being located in an opportunity zone eligible census tract, 1% for each of the various New Jersey business certifications, such as Women Business Enterprise, Minority Business Enterprise, and Veteran-Owned Business, and or having an active collective bargaining agreement or labor harmony agreement in place at the qualified business facility. Lastly, businesses must be in good standing with our sister agencies. Compliance with environmental laws and minimum sustainability standards is required. Construction and building service contracts must adhere to prevailing wage and affirmative action requirements. The payment of prevailing wages applies to all construction and building services work performed at the qualified business facility in connection with financial assistance received under the program. To conclude, the members are asked to approve the attached special adoption and concurrently propose new rules to the program and authorize staff to submit these rules to the Office of Administrative Law for publication in the New Jersey Register. Additionally, the creation of the program, a tax credit initiative program established by legislation, which is designed to attract and support manufacturers and clean energy product manufacturers throughout New Jersey. Finally, delegation of the authority of the Chief Executive Officer to approve administrative changes to approve the next New Jersey Manufacturing Program awards as it currently exists for the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020 programs and the approved CAFE program. Thank you, everyone, for your time, and happy to answer questions that you may have.
I'd like to just say that this was very thorough. Thank you for all of the information.
Not a problem. I know there's a lot in the memo, so I wanted to make sure.
I just have one question. The NJMVP program,
yes.
How do we differentiate or prevent duplication?
So the New Jersey Manufacturing Voucher Program was more of a grant program that was offering app of $250,000 for and reimbursement for equipment. This is going to be a tax credit initiative. So it's going to be higher thresholds of eligibility, which they need to hit, but it's also offering a cap of $150 million. So definitely a lot more awards for some of the manufacturing companies that are looking to apply.
So bad news, good news. There was no more money for manufacturing program. Currently, not accepting applications and doesn't have a plan to do for a while. Let's see what the future holds, but at present, that is not, you're asking exactly the right question, but at present, the conflict is not existing.
The recommended amendments in the memo, did that come out of public comment period? Or?
So this was during rule writing session, staff recommended, so when we were discussing a lot of the amendments, we wanted to make sure that we provided examples to provide further clarity of what is seen as traditional manufacturing to make sure that we're benefiting the proper companies.
So it's more intern.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
On your calculation, 0.1% times 100 isn't 10%, right? That's ends up to be 0.1%. 0.1% times 100.
Oh, I'm sorry. I might have misspoke then. It's 0.1% times the number of full-time jobs. So in the example, it was 100, so that should be 10%.
But it's not. Then you have to multiply it by 10%, not 0.1%.
Oh, 0.1.
Not 0.1%. Gotcha. I'm sorry. Yes. You're absolutely right. So, yeah, multiplying the number by 0.1, so that is then...
that's less than 1.
Yeah, so it's less than 1%. That's correct. So it's, 0.00.
Am I right about that?
For every 10 jobs, you receive 1% of your investment back. So it's...
Okay. Yes,
for every 10
yes.
jobs.
Yeah,
for every 10 jobs.
Right. So that's
10%. A minimum of 2%.
Okay. You just make sure how this is that how the statute's written?
That is correct.
Then that works. 0.1% wouldn't work. Okay. Any further questions? Okay, hearing none, can we hear a motion to approve?
Chair, just to clarify before we approve, we're approving with an understanding that it aligns with the rules, that it's 1 for 10%. Or 10 for, Paul, can you say what you said again?
10 jobs for every 1%.
Yes.
And we can update the memo so that the correct data is in this version that the board members approved today for the record. So
I think, I mean, someone can correct me.
Josh. But if I think we do this math, we'd never get to a maximum award. Thank you.
You're right.
Okay.
As described by Daniel. Yes, thank you.
So we'll vote to approve with that clarification included.
Yes. It will be consistent with the legislation.
Mm-hmm. When in
correct.
Doubt. When in doubt. We'll have a land.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
We need a first and a second. Sorry, Chair.
All right.
Yep. Chair, Fred Dumont, I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Fred. Josh, second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion is approved. Citing program. Next, the Commuter and Transit Bus Private Carrier Relief and Jobs Program.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Cassie Havens, and I'm an analyst in the Clean Energy Team. I'm here today to present an overview of the proposed third phase of the Commuter and Transit Bus Private Carrier Relief and Jobs Program, for which the authority was appropriated $3 million from the state 2026 fiscal year budget. As a reminder, the term private carriers refers to privately owned bus companies that operate regularly scheduled fixed route bus passenger services. These companies participate in NJ Transit programs and report transit data but operate privately owned routes that are not regulated or administered by NJ Transit. For those unfamiliar with the prior phase of the program, phase one was created after the EDA was appropriated $25 million from the state 2022 fiscal year budget from the Coronavirus State Fiscal Recovery Fund. The intent of the program was to provide financial relief to address the continued impacts of COVID-19 on private carrier bus companies seeing reduced ridership. Phase one was approved by the board in February 2022, and a second phase was allocated $12 million from the state 2024 fiscal year budget and was approved by the board in November of 2023. The third phase of this program has made some adjustments to build on lessons learned from prior phases. The intent is to operate a streamlined program to quickly deploy funding and help alleviate private carrier companies' continued revenue loss due to ongoing reduced ridership. To be considered eligible under Phase 3, applicants must provide proof of active private carrier status as recognized by NJ Transit at time of application. The EDA will use 5% of available funding, or $150,000, for administrative costs for the program. The remaining $2,850,000 will be allocated based on the eligible applicant's 2024 Vehicles Operated in Maximum Service, or VOMS, data as reported to and published by the National Transit Database. VOMS are the amount of revenue vehicles operated in order to meet annual maximum service requirements during the peak seasons of the year. This metric is submitted by every private carrier, which eliminates some of the data collection issues that Phase 2 encountered. Awards will be determined based on the percentage of 2024 VOMS each applicant has in relation to the total 2024 VOMS from all applicants. For example, if an applicant's 2024 VOMS is 19% of the total VOMS from all applicants, and the applicant would receive 19% of the $2,850,000 available funding. And industry stakeholders and NJ Transit have expressed support for this proposed methodology. Phase 3 will also be eliminating Phase 2's milestone-based disbursement approach, as it was administratively burdensome, and Phase 3's award will be much smaller than previous rounds, given reduced overall funding. Grant funding will be dispersed as one single payment upon execution of a grant agreement. This approach was used in Phase 1 and will allow funds to quickly be used to provide financial relief for private carrier companies facing continued reduced ridership. By continuing to support private carriers, the authority will help maintain critical transportation services for New Jersey commuters and foster economic resilience within the state. Thank you all for your time today. If you have any questions, I am happy to answer them now.
Perfect. Thanks, Kathy. Great job. You might be thinking this is unlike a lot of our other programs, and you're correct to be thinking that. There are complexities that I candidly don't remember off the top of my head why New Jersey Transit and DOT can't be the operator administrator of this funding. It's due to federal law and contracting requirements that transit has with these operators. So we called out of the bullpen to run some relief pitching, part of the fund, for a relief program. And we've done this now three times. So better at it every time, I hope, I think. But this is a bit of a field for what a traditional economic development program is. Although I would note, if these bus lines turn off, a lot of people have trouble getting to work and school.
And this is specifically legislated in the fiscal 26 budget. That's correct.
Just to add to it, I know whenever one of the companies closes, we are inundated in the county with phone calls from commuter towns like Nutley, Montclair, and what are we doing about it?
Yeah.
I missed them.
Talk to the mayor, no?
The whole can, I mean, West Orange, big issue. It is a thing.
Sure. Any further comments or questions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Move it, Warner.
Second. Second.
By Johnson.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Thanks. Next, the NJ Innovation Evergreens Fund, another qualified investment. Morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman. My name is Alexander Pacman. I'm a manager in the Venture Products Department here at the EDA, and I'm glad to present staff's recommendation for the EDA's 10th qualified investment under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund program. To date, we have approved partnerships with 26 qualified venture firms managing nearly $6 billion in assets. Assuming this month's investment is approved, the program will have invested and reserved over $30 million across 10 portfolio company investments. We have a robust investment pipeline in place for the duration of the calendar year and announced our second program tax credit auction to raise additional capital to fund future investments and expenses. The application for corporations to purchase a total of $50 million of program tax credits opened on September 2nd. We expect to bring the results of the auction to the board for approval in December. The investment presented for approval today is an application by EdgeMed Management LTD for a $1 million investment into the Series Seed stock financing round of Synchrony Medical, Inc. Synchrony Medical is a woman-led medical device company that started in Israel but is establishing its U.S. operations in New Jersey and has developed an FDA-approved respiratory therapy device. Upon approval, staff will reserve up to an additional $240,000 for direct administrative expenses, $146,700 for related management fee expenses, and $1.6 million for follow-on investments. Notably, this investment represents the program's first success story in attracting an international company to New Jersey. Edge Medical Ventures is a medtech-focused early-stage investment fund with offices in Jersey City and Israel. The firm was founded in 2024 and is currently investing a $15 million first fund. EdgeMed is particularly dedicated to supporting Israeli medtech companies looking to enter the U.S. market. The firm's partners previously managed a successful medtech incubator in partnership with the Sheba Medical Center, a leading health system in Israel, and the Israeli Innovation Authority. Synchrony Medical, Inc. is a pioneering company in the field of respiratory therapy dedicated to enhancing the quality of life for patients with chronic lung diseases. Founded in 2020 by the MedX incubator in Israel, Synchrony Medical has developed a highly differentiated FDA-approved home-use device known as the LibArity system. This innovative device works in conjunction with a mobile application to provide effective airway clearance therapy, significantly improves patient outcomes compared to the high-frequency chest wall oscillation vests that currently serve as the standard of care in the market. Although R&D activities will continue in Israel, Synchrony Medical will shift all other operations to the U.S. The EDA's investment will be part of a $2.5 million seed round. Synchrony Medical will use the funding to initiate commercialization and sales operations and will support additional R&D and clinical activities. The EDA's investment will be contingent upon Edge Medical Ventures successfully executing its investment into Synchrony Medical. That concludes my prepared remarks, and I'm happy to take any questions at this time.
You're also seeing patients in the hallway for advanced medical knowledge that you just deployed there?
That would be a bad idea.
Okay.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone questions?
One observation. Sheba Medical Center, just bringing everything all full circle, is one of the partners to Liberty Science Center's Strategic Innovation Center, which is called EdgeWorks.
Okay.
Worked and noted.
Could I hear a motion to approve? Thanks. Second.
Elijah.
Thanks, Bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those recusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none. It is approved. Good luck. Next, Michelle on the New Jersey Innovation Fellows Award.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Martinez. I'm here to present a request for approval for staff's recommendation to expand the number of New Jersey Innovation Fellows Cohort 1 awards to include applicants' StackWallet in the Innovation Fellows Mentorship Program. The New Jersey Innovation Fellows Program provides mentorship support to newly formed teams of eligible first-time entrepreneurs with business plans to operate in one of New Jersey's targeted industries, operating out of one of the eligible municipalities. Funds are dispersed over a two-year period, requiring grantees to attend a mentorship program and work full-time on their business for at least 2 years. To date, the program has made grants of approximately $6 million, with two more cohorts accepted, including one reserved exclusively for AI startups. Over the past 16 months, the program can boast to having 100% active participation and an 80% retention rate of the cohort companies. We facilitated over 1,500 hours, mentorship hours, as well as 200 office hour sessions as well, 50 networking sessions, 20 synchronous learning sessions, as well as 40% of companies reporting revenue growth over the last 12 months. 60% of our companies also have gone on to advance to NSF iCorp program grants, as well as hiring interns, about 10 of them so far. The program qualifies applicants based on an eligible team consisting of at least three individuals who must be eligible first-time entrepreneurs. This is defined as an individual who has never been a founder, co-founder, or owner of a business entity operating in a targeted industry in New Jersey, or has never received third-party institutional funding for any prior entrepreneurial ventures. During the Cohort 1 application period in 2023, which kicked off in 2024, the program received an application from applicant StackWallet proposing to a new company within the advanced manufacturing sector that planned to create wallets. Staff initially determined that two of the three entrepreneurs did not meet the statutory definition of the first-time entrepreneur due to their prior roles as founders and chief financial officers of a prior joint venture. On November 3, 2023, the program received the formal appeal for StackWallet. In the interval since receiving the appeal, along with legal affairs, as well as the AG's office, has reviewed the eligibility of the team specifically to ascertain whether the professional histories of the team exclude them from being first-time entrepreneurs as defined by the program. In response to staff's inquiry regarding the first-time entrepreneur status, staff determined that two of the entrepreneurs have not been involved as founders, co-founders, or owners of a business entity, nor have they received third-party institutional funding through past entrepreneurial mentors. Therefore, meeting the statutory definition of the first-time entrepreneur program criteria. As a result of this renewed eligibility determination, staff is now recommending that StackWallet be approved as members of Cohort 1 into the mentorship program and to receive a $350,000 grant. The applicant will join a robust network of 19 teams of innovation fellows looking to innovate. With that, I'll go ahead and take any of the questions that you may have.
We have the funds to do this. Any questions? So this is, again, a review of a declination that's now being suggested for approval.
Say folks have the right to appeal, we take it seriously.
Yep.
Yeah. Sometimes the wheels are just grind a little more slowly than you might think, which might.
Again, any other questions, comments? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? Thanks, Jewel. Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Recusals? Okay, hearing none, the recommendation is approved. Thank you. Next, delegated authority on the NJGC.
Mm-hmm. New Jersey Green Bank. Members are asked to approve delegate authority to the CEO. Bank Executive Director. The purpose of this delegation is to align the Green Bank's bylaws with the EDA's existing hiring structure. Article 9 of the Green Bank bylaws states, for the appointment of the first executive director, the NJEDA board shall approve the appointment. Subsequently, the executive director shall be approved by the NJGB board. When we drafted the Green Bank's bylaws a year and a half ago, we drafted them with the assumption that the Green Bank would be hiring directly. Didn't anticipate at the time of the drafting is the logistical challenges, such as health benefits, pensions, that would need to be overcome for the Green Bank to hire directly. For that reason, to date, all Green Bank staff have been EDA staff. Green Bank is expecting its first executive director to be an EDA hire as well. Since the EDA bylaws authorize CEO to hire EDA staff, and since the first Green Bank executive director will be EDA staff, this request for a delegated authority harmonizes the executive director appointment with CEO's existing hiring authority for EDA staff. Happy to take any questions.
And then after the initial hiring, and subsequent executive directors are approved by the Green Bank.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Any questions, comments? Motion to approve?
Dragon, motion.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, it's approved. Next, we're going to move to the Incentives Committee. The Incentives Committee met twice this cycle on August 26th and September 5th and considered several recommendations, which will be considered today. I'm not going to go through them. But one note, I will be recusing on the 533 Main Street LLC Aspire approval, as my prior employer is contributing equity to this project, and Vice Chairman Sarlo will lead the board on that vote. So first up is the Historic Property Reinvestment Program, updated rules.
I'm here seeking approval of special adoption rules and concurrent proposed rules for the Historic Property Reinvestment Program and to authorize staff to permit the special adoption rules and concurrent proposed rules to the Office of Administrative Law for publication in the New Jersey Register and submit the concurrent proposed rules for final adoption if no substantive comments are received. The Historic Property Reinvestment Program provides tax credits to incentivize rehabilitation of historic buildings in the state and is set up in a way that it can work in conjunction with the Federal Historic Tax Credit Program. Next page, just a quick legislative update on a history on the program. The program was established as part of the Economic Recovery Act of 2020, signed into law by Governor Murphy in January 2021 with some modifications in July of 2021. Rules for the program were presented and approved by the EDA board in February 2022, and they were published for public comment in April of 22 and published as final adopted rules in November of the same year. New legislative changes making improvements to the program were signed into law by the governor September of last year. And in general, the changes made to make it easier for smaller projects and projects in government-restricted municipalities to apply to the program. The proposed rules being presented today, in general, are consistent with the statutory changes. The proposed changes were posted on NJEDA's website for feedback and solicit comments in accordance with EO 63, and no comments were received. So I'll just go quickly to some of the main changes on the program. So first, that's the next slide, please. So first, we made some small changes to some of the definitions, with the two main changes being we made a change to the selective rehabilitation period, that's the construction time frame, maximum construction time frame that a project has. So we changed that for single-phase projects from 24 months to 36 months. We also made a change to the definition of qualified property, and those were two changes made to that definition. Number one, we made a change that allowed an additional type of historic designation to be used to make it more in alignment with the federal program. And second, we also allowed for now more than one building to be included as qualified property. We also made changes to the funding gap requirement. And before, there is the requirement that for all projects that apply, now that the requirement is it's not a requirement for projects that are smaller projects under $5 million or projects located in a government restricted. Next. We also made changes, next slide, please. Made changes to increase the award percentages and caps. So in the past, regular projects could have a credit of 40%. Up to a maximum of $4 million. That was increased to 50 with a maximum of $8 million. Regular projects and GRMs or qualified incentive tracks, that went from 45% to 60% and from $8 million to $12 million. And there was no change to the transformative. Finally, next slide. We also made, next slide, please. We made some changes to add additional, some exceptions for prior construction allowance. In the past, if you have done any kind of work in the property, you may not be qualified, even not qualified for the program. So we made some, created some exceptions for that. We also now allow for, we'll be accepting applications on a rolling basis rather than in limited application windows. We'll have a new lower fee structure for small projects under $5 million. And we made then two final smaller changes that are meant to bring the program more in alignment with other programs at the EDA. One of them was that we will, the way we look at eligible soft costs, and the other one being that now prevailing wage requirements will start at a slightly earlier date at time of board approval. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Soft costs at the board.
The soft costs before, we had a look back of a year, and there was no cap. So you, it could be as high as it was. So to be more in alignment with for other programs, what we're doing now is we allow a look back of 2 years at, from application date, and but we cap it at 20%.
Out of curiosity, for qualified property, I know there's certain criteria. Do we know the pool of qualified property in the state of New Jersey? I mean, have we done that in that?
No, it's a big pool because it's basically anything listed in the New Jersey Register. And by the way, that's the minimum that's registered, New Jersey Register, National Register, Pinelands, or certified local governments. And then, but then, you know, it adds to, it has to be income producing, it has to be, so it is thousands, if not tens of thousands. But we don't have, we do know what the pool is on a transport better property, because that's a much stricter.
Thanks.
Got it. Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Dragon.
Thank you, Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? But hearing none, the changes are approved. Thank you.
For the next two.
There you go.
All righty. So,
Stewart Commons.
Yes. So I'm going to just give you the quick overview for the program first, and then we'll go into the individual ones. So the general, I'm here to make recommendations for two awards under the Historic Property Reinvestment Program for a maximum total award of $24 million. The last application round under the program closed in December of last year. We received 10 applications with a total combined project cost of just under $430 million and an ask of tax ready request of just over $88 million. Of the applications that we received, we have one that was withdrawn by the applicant. We have three that have been previously approved earlier this year for a total of just over $29 million. We have two being recommended today, and we have four that remain under review. The award percentages under the program are based on project type and location, and both applications or both programs that, projects that are being presented today are located in a qualified incentive track. Therefore, they're eligible for awards of up to 60% up to a maximum of $12 million. Okay, with that, I will first start with Newark Commons. We're recommending a tax credit award under the Historic Property Reinvestment Program to QOCB Elabos Newark Urban Renewal LLC.
Really rolls off the tongue. I mean, that is
I know.
Marketing department.
Oh, I love it. In the not-to-exceed amount of $12 million for the Newark Commons Rehabilitation Project located in Newark. The project consists of the complete rehabilitation of the original St. Michael's Hospital into a mixed-use residential and commercial building with over 4,200 square feet of commercial on the first floor. The project is looking to do a co-living living situation in which there's residential units that will be rented as individual bedrooms to individual people. Because it's slightly unusual approach, we did require for the applicant to provide information from the agent in Newark to make sure that the proposed would work for affordability housing for low and income affordable controls as required under the law, and we got written notification from them saying that they agreed that it would work. and that they would be tracking that. The applicant is a single-purpose entity that was created for the purpose of doing this project. And while this is technically their first project, they have a multidisciplinary team that have professionals with experience on this, and members of the team provided resumes and information showing their background and their experience to make sure that they had the experience to prove that the project could be done. There is no co-applicant. The review for the application included sister agency legal and underwriting review, as well as review of project costs, including eligible costs and proposed construction schedule, as well as review of scoring and scoring by scoring committee. They received a score of 66.83 out of a possible 100, therefore surpassing the required minimum of 50. Information submitted by the applicant also showed the terms for sale of the credits at a price of 86 cents on the dollar, which exceeds the minimum requirement of the program. There was also an underwriting review was completed by NJEDA's underwriting department and found that the applicant has shown that they would have adequate sources of funding to cover all project costs and that there's a reasonable expectation that these sources of funding will be available to complete the project. The applicant also illustrated the wherewithal to meet the minimum 20% equity contribution requirement for the program and has demonstrated that there's a funding gap. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none, did I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Elizabeth second.
Second, Chairman.
Thank you, Charles. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? No, hearing none, the award is approved. Next, 10 Park Place.
All right. Chairman? I have to recuse myself from this. My employer, the County of Essex, through the Improvement Authority, may be involved in providing some conduit of finance.
Understood. Thank you, Phil.
All right. So I'm also here to recommending a tax credit award under the program for 10 Park Place North LLC in a not-to-exceed amount of $12 million. For the rehabilitation of project at the 10 Park Place Newark Rehabilitation Project located in Newark. A lot of the same words. They are seeking both historic credits as well as fire credits, and the fire credits will be presented next, but the project was reviewed together for both programs. The project consists on the complete rehabilitation of the 10-story historic fireman's fund building, which is located immediately adjacent to the New Jersey Performing Arts Center in Newark, into a mixed building with affordable housing. It's 100% affordable housing and some commercial retail space on the first floor. Work on the project, which has been vacant for years, will include, aside from all the interior work, it also include the cleaning and repair of all the masonry on the exterior of the building. The applicant, just like the previous one, is a limited liability company established in 2021 as a single-purpose entity to develop the project, and they have assembled a team of professionals with experience, with their main lead development entity for the project being the Verger Organization, which is a privately owned real estate company based out of Newark with extensive experience in development and management of residential, commercial, and hospitality property throughout northern New Jersey and New York City. The project does have a co-applicant, which is Home NJ Park Place LLC, which is fully owned and managed by Housing on Merit, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization out of Los Angeles that specializes in co-developing bond financing government-supported permanent affordable housing projects utilizing low-income housing tax credits. The applicant and the co-applicant enter into a participation agreement to specify that the co-applicant will be a participant on the project and will be providing services associated with the 100% affordable housing project, as well as they will be receiving the tax credits and monetizing the credits for both historic and aspire. Review of the application included sister agency legal underwriting review, as well as review of project costs, including eligible costs, and proposed construction schedule, as well as scoring by the scoring committee, and the application received a score of 65.1 out of a possible 100, therefore surpassing the 50 score of 50 required. Information submitted also show the proposed terms of sale at a cost of 87 cents on the dollar, which again exceeds the minimum requirements under the program. And the underwriting review completed by the underwriting department found that the applicants have adequate sources of funding to cover all project costs, and that there's reasonable expectation that the cost will be available to complete the project, and they illustrated the waterfall to meet the 20% minimum contribution requirement for the program, and demonstrated that there's funding.
We'll be hearing more about this in a few minutes.
Well, I was just going to say, Tim, for a comment on for the full board on the fact that this is getting both a historic and an Aspire award, and how we take that into account.
Yeah, sure. Start maybe go to Paul to help back me up here. So, but when the Economic Recovery Act was first signed into law, and we were working on these projects, we actually thought we would be seeing a lot more. We kind of ended up with stackable credits, where the Aspire program and leased brownfields and/or historic were going to reasonably often stack together. This is actually the first place that is going to be done, and they're one of the reasons you're getting these simultaneously is because the evaluations are quite linked. And Paul, welcome your help in filling that out, and or Dave Lawyer just has that simultaneously.
Yeah, I think overall, and one of the concerns that we often look at as well in these stackable situations, ensure what the feds call a duplication of benefits, so we're not paying for the same cost with two different resources. And that part of that analysis does happen in the both project teams as well as part of the underwriting analysis, ensure that developers are not being over-enriched by paying for the same historic door with historic credits, and then the Aspire team funding that as well. So there is some analysis there.
As a policy rationale, the historic program very purposely exists to encourage folks to preserve historic structures. It's cheaper to either knock it down or to just blow through the historic stuff and make it into condos or do whatever you're doing. As a policy matter, the state via this legislation wants to do that. Those are usually separate and apart, different costs than what the Aspire program could cover. The Aspire program could cover those things, but that typically maxes out for the traditional regular development stuff, and then a bonus on top. Similarly, the Brownfields program, which will be back for some fresh rules sometime soon, sometime in the future, also is incremental cost on top of what Aspire can normally do, because that's for significantly contaminated sites that have real exogenous costs on top of normal development stuff.
So again, we're conscious of the fact that there are two different awards. Mm-hmm. We're conscious of the fact that we're not paying for the same thing twice. Okay. Any questions or comments? Or the first thing we're voting on is the Historic Preservation Award. Can I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Elizabeth, second.
Second, Laura.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And we're noting Phil's recusal here. Any opposed, other recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, the historic award is approved. Now on to the Aspire award.
So we are seeking approval to award over $81 million in Aspire tax credits to a fully affordable residential project in Newark, located at 10th Park Place in the downtown neighborhood. You've heard about it. The project involves the adaptive reuse of the historic Fireman Funds building, a 10-story office to residential conversion development with 196 units, all of which will be fully affordable with some ground floor retail space. The 195,000 square foot building sits across from Military Park and is adjacent to Lexington Park and neighboring 930 McCarter Highway, which are two formally approved Aspire projects, though separate and distinct projects and developers. And if I can point everyone's attention to the map, it's very small, but NJ Park sits directly adjacent to the, if you're standing looking at the building to the right, and then McCarter Highway, the building sits closer to the water. So Aspire has supported a lot of redevelopment within half a mile radius. The memo also provides further project details, including unit mix breakdown and other building amenities. Ownership of the applicant is represented by a structure that is customary for biotech projects. So we have an investor member at 99.99% and is currently anticipated to be PNC Bank. And the remaining 0.01% ownership is split between two entities, Fireman Park LLC at 50% and 10PP Development Member LLC at the other 50%. The ownership will be the same during and post-construction, and once construction is complete, both entities will assume a shared responsibility in the asset management and operations of the project. The lead developer is the Berger Organization, which is based in Newark and has done a sizable amount of development and management of projects in the downtown area that include Robert Treat Hotel, Military Park Building, and Trip by Wyndham Hotel. This is actually the authority's second time evaluating an application for this developer. They also were the lead developer for a project that the board approved last year in April, which is 22 Fulton, a residential mixed income project, also in downtown Newark. The total development cost is $148.3 million. To help size the awards, we excluded costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules, including land costs and costs that were included prior to application, which brings the total eligible cost to about $135 million. The required developer equity contribution of 20% is equal to roughly $30 million, and in this case, the developer is contributing about $31 million, meeting the minimum requirement. Additionally, the applicant was subject to board approval as it received the approval a couple of moments ago for the state historic tax credits under the Historic Property Reinvestment Program in the amount of $12 million. The tax credits will be used during construction to fund qualified rehab expenditures and will be bridged as part of the construction. We subject the applicant's request to the program's various award caps. Since the project is located in an eligible incentive track, it's eligible to receive up to 60% of total cost or $90 million, whichever is less. And that is how we arrived at the $81 million award. Because the project is fully affordable residential and receiving low-income housing tax credits, HMFA's deferred fee model was used to measure the appropriate and reasonable rate of return. The total developer fee is $13.7 million with $7.3 deferred and $6.3 non-deferred, and this conforms to the agency's policy as the total developer fee is less than the 15% of total development costs, and the non-deferred fee is less than the cap of 8% of total development costs. We touched on this briefly. I did want to make the board aware that there are statutory award caps when we are considering projects that include LIHTC. In addition to any other tax credits that are administered by the EDA, that award cap is 90% unless the project is a fully affordable project, which is the case here. And so we evaluated the application within that context, and we did so consciously, within the confines of the legislation. And based off these factors, we're recommending an Aspire award of $81,051,155 for board approval. Happy to take any questions.
Any further questions, comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the Aspire Award for Penn Park Place? Thanks, Josh. Second. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Noting Phil's continued refusal. Any opposed recusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Okay, next, we're going to go to 533 Main Street. I am recusing on this item, as I mentioned before, due to the fact that my past employer is an investor in it. I'm going to turn it over to Vice Chairman Sarla to lead the board through this vote.
Thank you, Chairman. The second matter under the Aspire Tax Credit Program for the board to consider is the applicant 533 Main Street LLC for a single-phase residential project in East Orange, and here to present to the board is Renee Kratz.
Good morning. We are seeking your approval for an award up to $297.9 million, which consists of $35.6 million for land and up to $262.2 million for other eligible costs and Aspire tax credits for the applicant, 533 Main Street LLC, which will entail the new construction of a single-phase transformative residential project known as the Crossings at Brick Church Station, Phase 1B located in East Orange. I want to highlight that this project represents the second phase of a larger mixed-use development that will ultimately deliver more than 820 housing units, 84 units designated as affordable, and 63 workforce housing units, approximately 200,000 square feet of grocery-anchored retail, including a new expanded ShopRite to replace the existing store, and a 1,200 square parking space garage. Phase 1A, the first phase, contains 400 multifamily units with 20% as affordable and nearing completion. The parking garage is already built and operational, and the new ShopRite is expected to open by the end of October. So just wanted to share a little backdrop there. The site currently used as a surface parking lot, a bus to Brick Church, computer rail station on its southern boundary. The project will be a nine-story building with 420 multifamily rental units, including 84 affordable units and 63 workforce housing units. The total square footage is approximately 431,000 square feet, inclusive of common areas, including 86,000 square feet of retail and restaurant space, 26,000 square feet of office, medical space, and 342 parking spaces. The board memo also provides more details, including the rents for the affordable units. The building will include modern amenities and will comply with HMFA's and ADA's green building standards. The Brick Church area is experiencing strong development momentum, with both public and private investments helping realize East Orange's potential as a vibrant, transit-oriented urban district. The project will complement the thousands of residential units built nearby over the past decade, as well as those currently in the pipeline. In addition, the project will align with major improvements at the adjacent Brick Church station, train station, which is receiving $83.3 million in federal and state funding for significant upgrades. This is transit-oriented development at its best. The project site is currently owned by Brick Church Urban Renewal 7, LLC, which is wholly owned by the applicant. The project site is valued at $44.6 million based on appraisal conducted by Jones Lang LaSalle and submitted by the applicant on February 6, 2025. The applicant 533 Main Street LLC is majority owned by GFG 533 Main Street Investor LLC, an affiliate of Goldman Sachs Urban Investment Group, and managed by an affiliate of Triangle Equities Development owned by Lester Petraka. The lead development entity for the project is Triangle Equities Development Company LLC. This is the authority's first time evaluating an Aspire Award application for this developer. However, Triangle Equities has over $1 billion worth of new construction projects in some stage of redevelopment or construction. Triangle is a full-service real estate company that entitles, develops, owns, and operates commercial, residential, and mixed-use properties throughout New York City metropolitan area. Triangle Equities has successfully developed nearly 2 million square feet of residential and commercial real estate spanning retail, residential, industrial, self-storage, and office-assisted, and currently office assets, and currently has over 1 million square feet of real estate assets under ownership and management. Legal review and sister agency checks were cleared for this project. The memo was reviewed and approved by the AG's office. The project received a declaration of intent from HMSA in May of 2025 and seeking a commitment from HMSA in October 2025. The development budget is $425 million. To help size the award, we exclude costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules. This brings the total eligible project cost to $372 million. The developer must contribute at least 10% equity, or in this case, roughly $42.5 million. The equity in this project, when accounting for LIHTC, investor proceeds, Goldman Sachs equity, sponsor equity, and developer fee exceeds that number at roughly $68.9 million, which satisfies this program's requirements. The sources table and in the memo shows that there are other sources of debt and public funds in the deal. We subject this applicant's request to the program's various award caps. In this case, the project is eligible to receive up to 80% of the total eligible cost, or $400 million, whichever is less. Based on the aforementioned factors, we will be recommending an Aspire award up to $297.9 million for board approval. If approved, this project would be built and ready for occupancy within 25 months of start of construction. That concludes that.
Thank you, Renee. Can I get a motion to approve?
Aye, Jack.
Second. Okay. Any discussions or questions? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Recognizing the chairs for recusal. Any other recusals or abstentions? Hearing none. Motion passes.
Hey, Charles.
Gotcha.
All right, thanks. Next, 11 Spring Street.
All right. We are
seeing. Not done yet.
Oh, sorry. We are seeking your approval for an award up to $120 million and Aspire tax credits for an applicant 11 Spring Urban Renewal LLC, which will entail the new construction of a residential mixed-use project. The project is located at 11 Spring Street in New Brunswick. The proposed development will deliver 300 units, of which 20% will be affordable for low and moderate income households. The community will comprise of 27-story high-rise building with 186 one-bedroom, 102 two-bedrooms, and 12 three-bedroom units. Regarding project ownership, the project site was purchased by way of a deed dated December 16, 2024, between Albany Street Plaza Urban Renewal LLC and 11 Spring Street Urban Renewal LLC in the sum of $19.5 million. The applicant is a single-purpose entity, 11 Spring Street Urban Renewal LLC, which is solely owned by 11 Spring Street Member LLC, which is solely owned by Spring Street JV LLC, which is jointly owned by Boz Core Holdings LLC, Barai 11 Spring Street LLC, and NWA LLC. The lead development entity is Horizon Development LLC, which specializes in the development of large-scale public, private, mixed-income housing in urban municipalities of New Jersey. The firm develops, leases, and manages its property. Horizon Development is a visible real estate development company focusing on urban revitalization, mixed-use communities, and transit-oriented development. The company's experience with the agency includes the approval of 930 McCarter at the March 2024 EDA board meeting, and the 930 McCarter building is actually approximately a little over 80% complete. Additionally, 11 Spring is within proximity of the Helix 1 and Helix 2 developments, which were approved previously by the EDA board. Various projects completed by Barai Development are also listed in the board memo. Legal review and sister agency checks have been cleared, and the AG's office has reviewed and approved this memo. The total development budget is $172.2 million. To help size the award, we exclude costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules. The total eligible project cost is $160.8 million. The developer must contribute at least 10% equity, or in this case, approximately $17 million. Total equity consists of sponsor equity in the amount of $30.5 million, which satisfies this program's requirement. The sources table in the memo shows there are other sources of debt and public funds in the deal. If approved, this project will be completed and ready within 30 months of board approval. Based on the aforementioned factors, we are recommending an Aspire award in an amount up to $120 million.
Thank you. Great. Any questions, comments?
Dragon, I have a comment.
Sure, Elizabeth.
Thank you. For everyone's awareness, I'm New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection Commissioner LaTourette's designee on the board. And we just want to highlight what the department has witnessed as exemplary work at 11 Spring Street in Newark. The department appreciates the collaboration on this project. Throughout our collaboration, we've seen a consistent demonstration of dedication to cleaning up the environment and enhancing the quality of life for the future residents at the site. And thank you so much.
Great, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Good hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Thank you. Phil, I'll consider that a second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Hearing none, it is approved.
Thank you. One more to go? Wow. Okay.
Finish line.
Rowan Preservation.
Chairman?
Yes.
I'm going to recuse myself for this. The Rowan Towers is an active applicant of the Trenton City's land use boards.
Noted. Thank you.
We are seeking your approval for an award up to $66.8 million in Aspire tax credits for the applicant Rowan Preservation LLC, which will entail the rehabilitation of an existing affordable, fully affordable residential project known as Rowan Towers, located at 620 West State Street in Trenton. The applicant has explained that without the Aspire Award, this project would not be financially viable, a viable investment. In fact, there would be a negative return on the investment without the Aspire incentive. As part of our underwriting due diligence, we take steps to ensure the projects are not unduly enriched with an Aspire Award. And I'm sharing this because there was a reduction in the award that I just shared, so I just want to share a little backdrop about what our underwriting due diligence is. So as part of our underwriting due diligence, we take steps to ensure projects are not unduly enriched with an Aspire Award. For this project, the projected internal rate of return inclusive of the award exceeds the maximum reasonable rate of return threshold. To address this, the award was reduced from $77.5 million to the $66.8 that I just shared. So this $10.7 million adjustment brings the project internal rate of return directly in line with the maximum return, which ensures no over-enrichment of the project with the award. The proposed development will deliver 196 project-based Section 8 units, representing approximately 168,000 square feet within a 15-story building consisting of studios, 1- and 2-bedroom apartment units. The project also includes 106-space parking garage for resident use. The board memo also provides more details, including the rents for the affordable units. The building will include modern amenities and will comply with HMSA's and EDA's green building standards. With regards to site control, the purchase and site and sale agreement for Rowan Towers was executed July 1st, 2024, by and between Rowan Associates and Rowan Preservation LLC for the sum of $30.5 million. The applicant, Rowan Preservation LLC, is a sole purpose entity owned by the co-applicant Community Housing and Opportunity Foundation, for Rowan LLC and Michael McMurray. The project's lead development entity is SP Investment Fund 4 LLC, an affiliate of SP 4 Rowan LLC. This is the authority's first time evaluating an Aspire Award application for this developer. However, the SP 4 Fund LLC portfolio includes over 100 affordable housing properties, owning more than 12,000 units of affordable housing, totaling $1.1 million in development costs. The board memo also provides a list of various projects that they have been involved in. Both sister and legal reviews have been cleared. The memo was reviewed and approved by the AG's office. The total development budget is $95.8 million. To help size the award, we exclude costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules. The total eligible project cost is $92 million. The developer must contribute at least 10% equity, or in this case, $9.5 million. The equity in this project, when accounting for LIHTC proceeds, cash equity, and deferred developer fee, exceeds that number at roughly $64 million, which satisfies this program's requirement. The sources table in the memo shows there are other sources of debt and public funds in the deal. Additionally, because the project is receiving low-income housing tax credits, NJHMSA's deferred fee model was also used to measure the appropriate and reasonable rate of return. The total developer fee is approximately $8 million, with $3.9 million deferred, and not fully realized until after the 10th year of operations following stabilization. This conforms with HMSA's policy. The HMSA board meeting is October 2nd. Of which this project will receive a commitment from HMSA. Based on the aforementioned factors, we are recommending an Aspire Award up to $66.8 million for approval. Second.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Second. Motion.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Second. Thanks, Josh. Noting Marcielle's recusal, any other? Yes, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Noting Marcielle, any other recusals, objections, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion is approved. Sure, you don't want to do another one? Thanks. Next, on to NOL, the Technology Business Tax Certification Transfer Program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, let me be the first to say good afternoon to everyone. So this memo before you is for the Technology Business Tax Certificate Transfer Program, which is better known internally at the UDA and externally in the market as the NOL program. The NOL program allows eligible tech and biotech companies to make a tax credit out of their accrued losses in R&D. That credit can then be sold to another company. That company can use the credit against their tax liability. This year is going to be the 26th year of the program. The program has supported over 600 companies and provided over $2 billion in incentives in its lifetime. Each year, $75 million is available, and $15 million of that is earmarked for companies in innovation or opportunity zones or certified as one of minority businesses. Each company has a lifetime cap of $20 million. And new for this year, inflation. After we fully allocate the NOL pool, if undersubscribed, the remaining balance of the pool gets transferred over to next year's angel investor tax credit program. Some highlights from the lifetime of NOL and what its impact has been. These figures came from an independent impact assessment that was conducted on the program from inception through 2024. So the average survival rate for a tech and biotech company is 36%, while NOL participant companies, their survival rate has been 72%. And at the time of the assessment, over half companies were still in operation. When we look at total impacts, almost 88,000 jobs with 8.6 billion in wages can be tied to the program, along with over $28 billion in economic output. And also at the time of the analysis, NOL had stimulated $2.8 billion in tax revenue for the state, tied to only $1.3 billion in tax credits. And it's important to point out that the tipping point was 2018, and this is when the total tax revenue generated from the program exceeded what the total revenue forgone by the state was. So if we look at this year, we received 28 applications. 60% were from biotech companies, while the remaining 40 were from technology. 75% of these companies are private and 25 are public companies. Four would be located in an opportunity or innovation zone. One was certified as woman minority owned. And 19 self-disclosed as having diversity in their business through our common application questions. Finally, five of them would be new to the program. We're recommending 23 for approval. The requested benefit amount we expect to be around $48 million. That has to be confirmed by the Treasury. Five withdrew, and we are recommending none for decline this year. If you look, I believe it's Exhibit A in the memo. You can find the list of the companies recommended for approval. It has their location and also a brief description of the business operations. That concludes my prepared remarks. Happy to field any questions.
So again, it's $47 million requested, and our cap is $75 million. Below the cap.
Just one question. Do they get funded when they're approved or when they get purchased?
Purchased. So actually, it's the sales transaction that would generate the revenue, the capital for the company in the transaction. That typically, since there's no declines, we don't have to wait for any appeals. So that will probably go out in the October timeframe. It's up to the companies on when they close. Some will do them before the end of the year. Some do hold until the beginning of next year because there is tax implications on the sale.
Just a question. So does the company find the buyer or does Treasury find the buyer?
The companies do.
Companies.
There are third parties involved. We will post on our website buyers that they are the end user and they request to be put out there. We'll put them on a list so they can utilize that.
it is an interesting program. The funds are transfers of the losses, if not actual tax credits coming out of the Treasury.
The state manages that. It's not the entity.
No. We oversee the administration, but the actual transaction is done. We work very closely with the Treasury and taxation folks.
And is it PSE&G and people like that who are buying them?
You said a power buyer, part of the joke, but I think they've been joined by others.
Yeah, but you can guess it's the large corporate taxpayers within the state, so like the PSG, Verizon, Apple, so the world that are here.
Okay, great program. Any questions or comments? Can I hear a motion to approve the recommended awards? Second. Thanks. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, it is approved. Thank you, Clark.
Thanks.
Next, I'm going to give the DLRC report. The DLR committee met on August 26th to review and consider one item, which will be presented now by Angela.
Yep.
City sewerage.
The Atlantic City Sewerage Company has applied for and is requesting preliminary approval of an estimated $9 million tax-exempt bond to fund a project aimed at upgrading and expanding various sections and components of the sewer system in Atlantic City. This project is essential to meet local needs and demands while maintaining the integrity of the region. The preliminary approval will facilitate reimbursement of project costs incurred prior to the issuance of the bond. The public notice was published on EDA website on September 2nd. Updated tax clearance has been received. The applicant has been cleared by DEP and the Department of Labor. Legal review has been completed with no areas of concern. Since 1983, this applicant has received tax-exempt bond financing in total $55.6 million. Currently, the combined outstanding balance is approximately $20 million, and all previous bond issues are in compliance. Thank you.
Any questions, comments?
Those folks haven't done this that many times. We're not taking financial risk. We're not funding this. We are lending the tax shield. And there's obviously, of course, reputational risk that comes with this. Lending that they know.
So we are approving this application subject to public hearing, correct?
This is
a public hearing. Got it. Okay. So we are approving this application.
The request.
That's the request. Mm-hmm. Can I hear a motion to approve? Second?
Second, sir.
Thank you, Charles. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, it is approved.
Thank you.
All right, Charles, Real Estate Committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Real Estate Committee met on September 3rd to review report matters that were presented by staff for presentation to the board. The first one's an MOU with the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority. This matter is actually before the committee for a few months. We appreciate Mary and Tim keeping the committee up to date on this particular matter. Second is a recommendation for a construction manager for the Liberty State Park Revitalization Program for both phase two and the budget. Third is a recommendation for an operator for New Jersey base.
We
did that one. And so the third matter is an approval of Monica County office space. So staff will now provide detailed
recommendations. And then the C-Space program adjustment.
Correct.
Okay, so first is Bill on the MOU with CRDA.
Thank you, Chairman and the Board. My name is Bill Dixon. I'm Director of Infrastructure Construction within the authority. This is a follow-up to your prior board action in June where you approved funding for the CRDA to acquire the Renaissance Plaza, which they have since closed earlier this month. Our request is to approve a grant in the amount of $8,971,849 from the Property Assemblage Fund to the Casino Redevelopment Authority for capital improvements in Renaissance Plaza, 76,000 square foot shopping plaza in Atlantic City. It does consist of two separate buildings, the same property, and this is coming through the Economic Recovery Fund. We're also seeking delegated authority to increase the grant amount not to exceed $7 million additional dollars from the Property Assemblage Fund through the also the Economic Recovery Fund at EDA's discretion. If the that funding becomes available to the authority and CRDA provides final updated construction estimates from their construction bids that prove they need additional funding. Renaissance Plaza's situation here is Renaissance Plaza is over 30 years old. The prior owner has not really maintained the property adequately recently. It does need it does need improvements to be able to maintain Atlantic City's only grocery store and give CRDA the ability to also lease out other space at Renaissance Plaza. Atlantic City is one of New Jersey's 50 food deserts with a population of over 40,000 people. The current condition of the plaza, as I said, is deteriorated, so is the buildings. The goal here is for us to improve with this funding the entire shell of these buildings, do the necessary improvements also to the interior to facilitate the grocery store to maintain and actually provide better services than what it currently does today. And it will also enable CRDA to competitively be able to lease out the additional space that's currently available. Second page. CRDA has agreed to the terms of the MOU. Their board has already approved, already has provided delegated authority to execute the MOU. CRDA is in the process of awarding a design contract to one of their pre-approved AE firms. Once the design is complete, they will go forward with bidding the construction to they have a short list of pre-approved contractors. It's going to take about 10 weeks, and in about 10 weeks, we will know what the actual bid prices are so we can make decisions on whether or not they need additional funds or not, and if they do, up to how much. Right now, my opinion is I don't think they're going to need up to that $7 million. Of additional dollars, but hopefully they don't. And, you know, we're hoping for competitive bids due to the limited construction market that currently exists. Any questions?
This is a goal of getting a better supermarket to that location, right?
To improve upon them, yes. There's, right now, they're going through the process of determining who the next operator is going to be of that supermarket and what improvements they're going to make. They want to make improvements. They're going to expand some of their square footage. All that's being, we're coordinating, you know, we're like the third wheel here.
CRDA and them. And CRDA owns it. Will own it.
CRDA
owns it now. They bought it from a developer, right? We talked about this.
They closed last week.
Goal one, blight's a strong word, but goal one, let's call it existing conditions improvement stabilization. Mm-hmm. Goal two, right behind it, probably a bigger goal, but in grocery store expansion stabilization.
Yeah, and they're expanding. The part of the requirements of the prior MOU was to vacate the liquor store, so to facilitate this expansion.
Got it. Any further questions, comments? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont makes a motion, Chair.
Okay, so Elizabeth, that's a motion, and Fred, that's a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the action is approved. Thank you. Next, Liberty State Park Revitalization Program, Phase 2.
Hammond, members all. I am representing the Real Estate Development Group today to present on the Liberty State Park revitalization program requests. To refresh the members, at the May Board of this year, members approved the authority entering into an MOU with NJDEP to accept the authority as the delivery partner for phase two of the Liberty State Park revitalization program. The program adds much needed park features and a beautification of the MOU was fully executed in May of this year, and since that time, the project team has been working diligently to position ourselves to present these items to you today. With this in mind, staff are requesting members approve two items for phase two of the program, selection and award of the construction management contract for AE Competition, and to establish a not-to-exceed pre-construction budget in the amount of $325,254. First, the award of the construction manager. The authority initiated the solicitation for construction manager on July 30th, 2025 of this year. Solicitation method for this project was union approved by the Governor's Authorities Unit and the Office of the State Comptroller. OSE also has reviewed and approved the construction management contract for this project. Should be noted that the approval from the GAU gave EDA the ability to solicit a Department of Treasury pre-qualified pool of construction managers that contain 56 pre-approved vendors. A mandatory virtual pre-bid conference was held on August 4th of this year, with 17 eligible construction management firms attending from that pre-qualified. An optional site visit for firms who attended the conference was offered on August 6th, which was attended by four firms. On August 27th, the authority received one proposal, which was subsequently evaluated and ranked by a selection committee in accordance with the authority's policies, and the committee was comprised of NJEDA and NJDEP staff. The responsive vendor, AE Competition, received a 92 out of possible 100 points, as they demonstrated clear understanding of their scope work, of the scope of work by their proposed approach, indicating their proposal to delivering this project. This was underscored by the well-qualified staff they presented, coupled with their extensive relevant company experience. AE Competition has provided a pre-construction service fee of $298,427 and a project labor agreement development fee of $26,837, which comprises the pre-construction budget to be established today. To deliver the project, construction manager has proposed a fee of 2.65% of the cost of the work with a guaranteed maximum price, or a construction fee of 1.75% without a guaranteed maximum price. The authority will select the fee offering within 60 days of the contract execution, and the authority will coordinate with NJDEP prior to selection. The authority's procurement department issued a recommendation for award on August 29th for the selected vendor. An internal legal review of the selected vendor's compliance documentation was completed on September 3rd, thus making the vendor eligible for the award the members are asked to approve today. So we got it in just in time for today. So the next slide. So the next request is to establish the pre-construction budget. Due to the current level of project design that DEP has and uncertainty of construction costs, as we're still working through detailed cost estimates, the real estate team would like to give a notice to proceed for pre-construction activities only at this time. RED teams intention is to issue the pre-con NTP in concert with the fully executed construction management contract. This will initiate the pre-construction phase, and doing that now is critical to achieve the project goals and attempt to expend all funds within their respective deadline. Once design has further advanced and the construction manager has provided critical input on opinion of probable cost and value engineering alternatives, a real estate team will return to the board, likely in December of this year, to present the comprehensive construction budget prior to proceeding with construction. The NTP for pre-construction activities will establish a not-to-exceed budget in the amount of $325,264, as mentioned previously, in accordance with the CM's fee schedule. The table shown on the right-hand slide is taken directly from the executed MOU and illustrates the funds available for the project development. Funds are distributed by NJDEP in tranches as they are spent. That's what was indicated in the MOU. And the authority has received that first tranche, which is $6.7 million in federal funds, which the pre-construction budget will be drawn from. This concludes the request today. Happy to take any questions.
Great job, John. One quick reminder, there are any number of opinions out in the world about Liberty State Park, what ought to be developed there. We are not a haver of those opinions by dint of this responsibility. We are an implementer of DEP and the commissioner's plan, which the governor supports, of course. So we are not in the decision-making chain of command on what, where, how, who's doing what's.
We are the project manager.
We're the project manager, the implementation part. Anyone has questions about what happens at Liberty State Park? I'll call Elizabeth if she's on the phone, or DEP, I'm sure, is available.
Okay. Any further questions, comments? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah. We'll put your cell phone number in the minutes.
Was that a second, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or recusal abstentions? Hearing none, the contract award as recommended is approved.
Thank you.
All right, next, the Garden State CPACE program. We're getting there, guys.
Okay.
Two more. Final count.
Thank you. Members of the board, my name is Max Frank, and I'm a senior project officer on the clean energy team. Today, I am presenting a memo regarding a policy adjustment to the Garden State Commercial Property Assessed Clean Energy, or CPACE, program. The CPACE program enables eligible commercial property owners to undertake energy and resiliency-related improvements and repay the investment as a special assessment on their property tax bill. For further context specific to today's request, the program was authorized by statute in August of 2021 and at the time explicitly exempted all projects utilizing CPACE financing from the authority's prevailing wage requirements. However, a 2024 statutory amendment reversed this exemption and set forth the requirement that all forward-looking projects would require prevailing wage. In addition to this amendment, a policy decision was made to also require the authority's prevailing wage requirements on all retroactive projects, meaning projects that were either underway or completed within the three-year statutory look-back period. The program with said policy decision was approved at the October 2024 board meeting, and project applications opened on July 30th, 2025, but no applications have been submitted yet. The situation now faced is that certain project owners became aware of the program in 2021 or earlier when the original bill was signed. At the time those projects proceeded with construction, they complied with the CPACE Act. However, at the time, staff proposed the supplemental guidelines based on the 2024 amendment requiring prevailing wage for CPACE projects. These existing projects were not contemplated. Altogether, staff proposes a programmatic adjustment to exempt projects from prevailing wage requirements so long as the project meets the following additional requirements. One, the project was deemed substantially complete by October 9, 2024, evidenced by a temporary certificate of occupancy or equivalent documents. Two, the application for such project is submitted no more than 3 months following board approval of this request. Three, the project has a minimum construction value of $25 million. And four, the project applicant certifies that at least 75% of all project labor costs comprised of wages and benefits were paid at or above the applicable prevailing wage and benefit rate for the respective trades of those employees during the time of construction. Through this programmatic adjustment, projects that are significant economic investments in the state will be able to maintain continued financial viability while still advancing the state's policy supporting family-sustaining wages. Thank you all for your time. Happy to answer any questions.
Any comments, questions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? Thank you, Charles. Second. Thank you, Maciel. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? So hearing none, the amendments are approved. Finally, Brian on Monmouth County office space.
There you go. Brian Keenan, Senior Project Officer here at CDA. And thank you for holding on to the end. So in June, we came to you with a request to approve office space at 12 Christopher Way, and despite repeated written and verbal requirements of the landlord that he perform all construction work with prevailing wage, at the last minute when he was meeting with compliance, he backed out of that deal.
Just for context for everybody, this is moving our space.
Our Fort Monmouth space.
Because Netflix is going to knock it down.
Correct. So all good things, we're moving. you said, the Fort Monmouth office. The Fort Monmouth office will be sold and unoccupied by us by the end of the year. We need new office space. Since this landlord was not compliant, we went to the second office space on our list from our score sheet, which was formerly called Conville. Now it's called Bellworks at Fort Monmouth. And we are proposing a lease of 10,998 square feet. We adjusted it slightly from the screen, at rent of $39.75 a square foot, plus $760,000 for FF&E and tenant improvements and delegated authority to the CEO to enter into a reimbursement agreement for the landlord for pre-development agreements, pre-development costs prior to the execution of the lease. And the execution of a lease with the landlord, Somerset Development, or its subsidiary. And he has been told repeatedly and in writing and agreed and had a meeting with compliance on prevailing wage.
And that's the reason we had to back out of the
contract. Correct. All right, any questions?
Any questions? Comments? Motion to approve? Thanks, second.
Thanks, Juan Johnson, second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recuses, or abstentions? Hearing none, it is approved. Thank you. Tim, you want to spend a couple hours on where I'm at?
Needed to get paid every 2 weeks. I'm going to desire to keep my job and not keep you here any longer. Thank you very much. So, yeah, a couple memos here.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So unless there are any other questions or business before the board, can I hear a motion to adjourn? Today, operator, thank you. You can sign off and thank you everybody for your diligence and on a very long but worthwhile agenda. So thank you. Thank you all.
This concludes our conference for today. Thank you for participating and for using Verizon Conferencing Services. You may now disconnect.